Recording in progress.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you all for being here tonight. Today is Tuesday, May 23rd. The time is 5:32 p.m., and this is the Gunnison City Council regular city council session on being held at 201 West Virginia Avenue, Gunnison, Colorado. We will begin with public input at this time. Anybody that would like to share any thoughts on any items that are not on the agenda, you've got 3 minutes to speak, please. And I'll ask that you come forward and state your name for the record, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Pitt. I am here about the Transit Center, and I know it's been postponed and delayed, and thank you very much for not putting it on the public property at the rec center. But I have some questions, and I have written things for everybody. I don't know. I'm going to take one and pass them around, but I've got some concerns about the security for the Transit Center. My questions are the bags checked for weapons, drugs, anything like that, or do you know?
So during public input, we will hear your thoughts, concerns, questions. We're not in an open discussion at the moment, but we'll take this and can get back to you.
The other thing is, so I just noticed that there was fentanyl found at the Grand Junction bus stop, 22 pounds, roughly 100,000 pills in February. And then in May, in Durango, there was a bus stolen, crashed. Continued driving to Ignacio, so these kinds of things are a concern to me. The other thing I'd like to talk about is the structure. According to the newspaper on May 11th, Scott Truex said, what we are talking about is a glorified bus stop, but not much more. It's a little office with some restrooms and a waiting area. So my question, why does it need to be 2,000 feet? And why does it need to cost $3.5 million? The other thing that really concerns me, and it concerned me the last time when I was here talking about public notice, there was a notice put in the paper on February 23rd stating that what the intentions of the bus center was. I happened to be out of town, and I heard through the grapevine about it. And then during that time on February 23rd, the public schools were closed for February break for a week. Then on April 11th, RTA presented a proposal. We never heard anything after that. We never saw publicly their design, their plan, nothing. And then on the 25th, the public was allowed to speak. And it was determined at that time that there were, I heard, 153 emails that the city received. And in addition, there was a petition of 534 registered voters, all in opposition.
30 seconds.
And so, in my opinion, I think that both RTA and the public of our community, our taxpayers, would benefit from more open discussions about this proposal. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Linda. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Anybody else that wants to share any thoughts, questions, concerns, ideas for 3 minutes? I see no one in the room. Do we have anybody online, Erica? Not
I
seeing
don't see anybody,
anybody
with
online.
Raised.
Okay. Great. Then we will move on to the next agenda item, which is agenda item 3, a public hearing. The time is 5:37 p.m. Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023, in the Council Chambers of City Hall, 201 West Virginia, in Gunnison, Colorado. Excuse me.
Screen.
Thank you. Present at the hearing are myself, Mayor Diego Plata, Mayor Pro Tem Mallory Logan, Councilor Freeburn, Councilor Miles, Councilor Gelwicks, City Manager, Finance Director Ben Cowan, City Attorney Kathy Fogo, Wester Liaison Leah Taylor, welcome to the group.
Thank you.
And City Clerk Erica Boucher. The purpose of the public hearing is to receive public input on the merits of Zoning Map Amendment Application ZA-23-3 submitted by the City of Gunnison to rezone a property from industrial to R3 multifamily residential. Does the City Clerk have proof of publication?
Yes, in your packet you can see the proof of publication in the newspaper. It was also on our bulletin boards and the website, and we completed the certified mailing as well, too.
Thank you much, Erica. At this time, would city staff please testify and make your comments?
Sure. So the Land Development Code, Section 10.2, specifies that an amendment to the official zoning map may be initiated by City Council, the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Community Development Director, or the owner of, holder of, or that has a recognized interest in real property whose zoning is proposed to be amended. Zoning amendment shall be reviewed by the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission at a public hearing after 15 days public notice. The commission establishes a recommendation to City Council to approve with conditions, deny, remand the application back to the applicant with instructions for modification. City Council shall consider the recommendation of the Commission at a public hearing and shall, by ordinance, approve, deny, or remand the application back to the applicant with instructions for modification or additional information. The Planning and Zoning Commission has met and has recommended approval to City Council, and tonight is the public hearing for City Council to consider that recommendation. The applicant for this zoning change is myself, the Community Development Director, and the request is to rezone a property that is currently zoned industrial to R3 multifamily residential. The legal description of the property is Parcel 2, replat of the Fred R. Field Western Heritage Center, Sawtooth Phase 1, boundary line adjustment in City and County of Gunnison, Colorado. So the site has historically been used for the carnival and association with Cattlemen's Days in July. And during the remainder of the year, the parcel remains vacant. And the County of Gunnison owns this parcel, as well as land to the north, and has discussed housing projects on these sites over the last 2 years. Ultimately, the site is proposed for R3 multifamily and from the existing industrial zone district, and the R3 zone allows for all housing types and a density of up to 80 units per acre, although 30 to 40 units are proposed.
Great. Thank you very much, Anton. Any additional anything? At this time, we'll turn to the public with that information in mind. And would anyone like to make a comment at this time from the public? Please come forward and state your name. Thanks for being here, Lauren.
My name is Lauren Ahonen. I reside at 106 Mountaineer Drive here in Gunnison. And I just want to, I'll keep this brief in respect to the council and the public's time and capacity. But I'm here to voice my support in terms of the residential rezoning to R3 on the parcel in question. I think it's 14th and Bidwell, essentially, right? While many have actively grown accustomed to a certain level of activity or lack thereof on that parcel over time, I think, in our community, I just wanted to note that neighborhoods and cities are both fluid and evolving in their construction. And as our community faces a crisis, as we struggle to solve the housing problem for our friends, coworkers, and neighbors alike, the industrial to residential conversion, especially at the higher density, allows for expanding housing capacity in a neighborhood with already adjacent diverse uses. And I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate
it. Can I have you sign this for me, Lauren?
You may.
Take your autograph.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you for being here, Molly.
Yeah, thank you. Molly Mugglestone. I am now with the Valley Housing Fund. So it's good to see you all in that capacity. We submitted a letter, which I now need to pull back up on my phone, on May 15th, and so I'm not going to read that, but I just wanted to voice the support of the Valley Housing Fund for this rezoning. We feel like, similar to what Lauren just said, within city limits, central infrastructure and location are key when looking at affordable housing projects, and our organization is a nonprofit. Our board vice chair, Jim Starr, did submit that letter, so hopefully you guys have that. If not, I can resend it. But in that letter, we do talk about the benefits of the location, being close to central infrastructure, schools, grocery stores, public transportation. We feel that projects like this to be best suited for both the residents and the town, and those of us who will benefit, which really includes all of us, local workers. We know employers are definitely struggling with finding housing for their employees, and there definitely is a critical shortage in housing, so we highly support this and hope that you will move forward with the rezoning. This is not going to solve all of our problems, but 30 to 40 units definitely eases the strain, and again, the location is really critical and key, and so the Valley Housing Fund supports this effort to increase affordable housing.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Molly.
You, guys.
And thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anybody else from the public? Yes.
Hey, everybody. Andy Kadlick, the Gunnison Valley Regional Housing Authority, and I'm here as well to express support for the rezoning of Parcel 2, with the intended use being the second phase of the Sawtooth Community Housing Development. You know, being the director of the Regional Housing Authority, we see a lot of the need come through our door, and as recently have seen a noted increase, especially in the second quarter of 2023, specifically people looking for more housing in Gunnison. A quick check of our recent interest list has shown that in the last 2 months, 71% of people that have signed up for updates on rentals are specifically looking for rentals in the city of Gunnison. So I think this is an appropriate time, especially with phase one and looking at phase two, to start meeting that need and demand. It's, again, you know, 30 additional, up to, you know, 30 to 40 additional rental units with a really good diversity of housing that's targeted. Here in the city of Gunnison, for the Housing Authority's portfolio, we don't have a lot of ability to offer housing at this middle income range, and the county's commitment from 80% up through 100, 120 or so is a really unique section that hasn't really been met recently, that has quality control by the county as well as the Regional Housing Authority as the property manager. We're in negotiations to work with the county to help oversee the property. And I think it just really aligns well with the city's comprehensive plan. This proposed zoning change takes advantage of promoting growth, density, and affordability for homes in the area. And it's a really decent location that provides good pedestrian access to public transit, to community spaces, grocery stores. I mean, you could walk to the airport. I don't think you can do that in a lot of communities. That's pretty cool. So, as well as the second goal that the city has is increasing that supply of rentals to maintain a healthy vacancy rate. You know, 5% is kind of considered a standard healthy vacancy rate for rental housing in the community. And, you know, there just really isn't that from my conversations with some of the other property owners looking at even Paintbrush, one of the more larger developments that was built recently. It has a consistent 100% vacancy. That's not healthy. It's important to have a little bit of flexibility there. And so this is, again, a positive step forward towards providing healthy stability in the rental portfolio for the city here. So as well as what everyone else has already said, I mean, it's a great opportunity to bring stable quality housing to our community members here in the Valley. So thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. And we do have someone online, too, when you're ready.
Okay. Yep. We see your hand online, Mary. We'll call you up next. We've got somebody here at the desk. Okay. Thanks for being here. Please state your name for the record.
Jim Averill, own the property at 301 South 14th Street, just down the road from this development. I also agree with everyone else, what they've been saying. I would like to see this be pushed forward, and I would also like to see some kind of traffic mitigation on that street. It's a very wide street, and already a lot of cars zoom by my shop. daily, about 40 miles an hour. A little concerning for me with the added 30, 60 units in there, being about another 150 cars a day, probably going back and forth. But again, I do agree that this should get pushed forward. It is extremely difficult to find proper housing for employees. As an employer myself, I already rent two trailers for employees, and so this would be a great addition to the community.
Thank you much. I appreciate it. Okay. Mary Burt, we will... Can you hear us? We see that you're on mute. Oh. Oh. Okay. Anybody in the room want to talk? Yes. Oh, wait, sorry. We'll come right back to you. Mary, if you're... We can hear... We can see you, but you're muted, yeah.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, city council members, for letting me join and chime in as probably the homeowner who would be impacted the most by this neighborhood development living on South 14th and Evans Street. Although we oppose this zoning to R3, we don't oppose this, you know, affordable housing, obviously. However, the concern is that the number of units, you know, this whole project started out as 32 units total. Now we're looking at, with this, at the minimum, a total of 48. And so what I would like to ask is the minimum. Please do the minimum units, because the way the lot is situated next to the public safety center and in between the fairgrounds, because of all the traffic congestion that Mr. Averill just mentioned, as a resident and a homeowner on this corner for 16 years, we've had at least six other industries come in causing congestion on 200, 300 South 14th Street Boulevard, which causes law enforcement. As you know, for the public safety center, there's multiple agencies that use the public safety center using Evans Street to access the alley, to access public safety center. Now, from what I heard from the last zoning and meeting, was that they are going to expand Evans. They're not going to close the fairgrounds exit, and it's just going to funnel more traffic down Evans, down South 14th, and there's no sidewalks. We have sidewalks on half these blocks. We, you know, hopefully there will be a lot of families and children, but you're talking about pedestrian ways to stores or to Safeway, to the bus stop. There are none. There are no sidewalks down here. We're forced to walk in the street. And, you know, industries just like the ones on South Boulevard, they're blocking the street to do their business. We have no other way to go. Law enforcement has no other way to go but use Evans Street. And so we would like assurances of sidewalks. We want safety and the minimum number of units. And we'd love to talk about it more, but that's, you know, that's really what I think would help us feel a lot better, because it keeps moving the number of units. I even saw on one of the plans that already the current units that they're putting in, they're trying to narrow the sidewalks to 4 feet instead of the standard 5 feet, which would not be equitable for someone who is disabled. So, you know, for the safety of our community, of this emerging neighborhood, I'm just asking you, please, assurances of safe passages and the minimum number of residences to not cause more problems in our neighborhood.
Thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate your input. Are there any other comments from, yes, please. Thank you.
My name is John O'Neill. I live at 416 Gothic Avenue in Crested Butte, and I am on the board of the Valley Housing Fund. And also, Fading West, who is the modular manufacturer for Phase 1, is a client of mine on two other projects. But I'm here to speak in favor of this project and in favor of the zoning change. With the current housing crisis, you know, every single home in town is extremely important. And every home gives the opportunity to someone or a family to build a life. And because of that, every parcel is extremely valuable. And there's just not many parcels that are left that could be an R3 or a multifamily parcel. So every piece of land that could support multifamily should be multifamily. I had an interesting experience in the parking lot of City Market the other day. There was a car with a trailer next to me, and it had bikes and all kinds of stuff on the trailer, and I looked over, and I recognized the person, and I said, where are you going? You look like you're going on a big adventure. He said, well, actually, my housing situation is not firm right now, and I'm having to move to Lake City for the summer. And it happened to be the superintendent of the school district. And so it's just interesting that so many people experience housing insecurity, and people that are extremely important for this community, I would say, put the max number of units on this piece of land, not the minimum, because every single one of those makes a big difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. O'Neill, could you sign it, please?
All right. Anybody else in the room or online that would like to provide any comments during this public hearing? I see no one in the room, and I don't see any raised hands online. Going once, going twice.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, one more. Yes, please.
I didn't sign in.
That's what you can do it afterwards.
Okay. Hello, I'm Laura Puckett Daniels, Gunnison County Commissioner. I live at 27 Crystal Road in Mount Crested Butte. And I'm here mostly to say thanks so much for having us, and thank you for your partnership in tackling this affordable housing crisis. In the city of Gunnison, Paintbrush and the Lazy K developments have made a difference by housing people in our community, and you guys have taken strong leadership by naming affordable housing as one of your top four policy priorities in your current strategic plan. I read through your comprehensive plan today, and it was really exciting to see how you emphasized housing in that plan with your specific goals and specific strategies to try to tackle this crisis. And I see the city as a really important partner along with the county in creating these projects inside our communities. Your 2020 comprehensive plan stated the problem succinctly. 74% of residents in and around the city of Gunnison felt that housing affordable for the workforce was one of the most serious problems or the most critical problem in the region. You guys know these numbers. They're numbers you produced. So I'm not going to hammer on that. But I want to really underscore that it's not just folks who are unhoused in our community. It's also folks who are underhoused. As you know, there's a great deal of housing stock, particularly mobile homes, that is inadequate. Folks are living in old, cold, crowded units that may or may not have running water or sewage systems. Sawtooth will give folks another option. The county's hope is that if there are enough quality housing options there, then many of the substandard options will go away, either because people will leave them behind because they can move into something much nicer, or landlords will feel the pressure to upgrade their systems because there are better housing options on the market. So this isn't just about the 490 folks that need housing right now, according to the needs assessment. It's also about all these folks in our community who are living in substandard conditions. I'm not going to go through your goals. I'm sure you know what they are. But tonight's rezoning is one step in furthering those goals. Your comprehensive plan emphasizes infill. It emphasizes neighborhoods. It emphasizes creating multifamily opportunities. John O'Neill spoke to it really eloquently. There's only so many parcels left. I don't want to be the one who sits down with 10 or 20 families and says, I'm sorry, you don't get a home, when there is an opportunity to make one that people could live in. I know that this change is going to bring some changes to the neighborhood. The traffic sounds like one that needs to be looked at. Maybe there's mitigation that can be done. Your streets are beautifully wide. I walk them a lot and generally feel pretty safe. But I think that thinking about sidewalks is just a really important connectivity feature in our cities. But I do think that this change can bring some good things too. More people in more quality, energy-efficient homes they can afford means more people who are less stressed. It means fewer people on the brink of survival. It means more folks in homes. More folks in homes means more kids on bicycles, more neighbors to look after your cat when you go out of town, more folks to talk to about how they grow vegetables at 77,000 feet, more over-the-fence chats about your travels that you're doing, more grilling out together. It means more neighborhoods. So thank you for your leadership in tackling this issue, and I look forward to more ways that we can partner together to strengthen our communities.
Thank you much, Laura.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else in the room that would like to share your thoughts? Anybody online? See none? Okay. We will then move ahead with the public hearing and ask the city clerk if we've received any written comments from the public that need to be entered into the record.
Yes, the city of Gunnison did receive one additional comment today from Brad Baca, Gunnison resident and president of Western University, and he has also written in support of rezoning that area as well, too, and has spoken to many of the same reasons that have been talked about tonight. So that letter was passed along to you earlier today and will be included in your council packet for permanent record.
Thank you, Erica. And then at this time, I will call on each council member for clarifying questions about statements made during this public hearing. And we'll go my left to right. Jim?
None tonight.
Thank you. Mallory?
I don't have any clarifying questions at this time.
No clarifying. Okay. Jim?
Can I just speak instead of ask questions?
Discussion.
Discussion
is on the agenda for later.
Yeah, we'll chat later. No clarifying. Okay. Bo?
Nope. I don't have any questions either.
Leah?
No questions.
I do have one question. In layman's term, 80 to 120% EMI, and what would that equate in rents?
This is the zoning map amendment
okay.
application.
So right. Okay. Yeah, we're
Sorry. Further down the road on the site development committee.
Thank you, Kathy. Does that answer your question for now?
Okay. It does not answer his question.
Cool. We'll just leave you in the dark for now.
It'll get in.
We'll get there. I have none, so I will then move into any final comments from the public before I close this public hearing. Seeing none in the room. Seeing none in Zoom land. Okay. Then with that, we will close this public hearing at 6 p.m. Promptly at 6 p.m. That's awesome. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your input and feedback. Thank you, Anton, for your work. We'll move into the next agenda item, approval of the May 9th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes.
I'll move to approve the May 9th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes, and I make a motion to... move that.
I'll second that.
It has been moved and seconded. Erica?
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Galwitz?
Yes.
So carried.
Thank you much. We will now move into resolution number 9, series 2023, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, commending Greg Larson for his contributions to the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission. And there he is. You're hiding back there. Thank you for being here, Greg. Yeah. No.
I'll introduce resolution number 9, series 2023, and request the mayor read it in full.
Very well. Introduced. Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded.
Well, it's been introduced. It hasn't been moved.
Adoption.
Right.
To be Semantics. Read in full.
Semantics.
Yes. Right. So, yeah.
Okay.
Regardless, just read it.
Give me one second while I pull it up here, Greg. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. goodness. There it is. Okay. Thank you so much for being here, Greg, and thank you for all your time.
Well,
we do have a resolution
to
read for you, and hopefully it's short and sweet. All right. Resolution number 9, Series 2023. A resolution of City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, commending Greg Larson for his contributions to the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission. Whereas, Greg Larson has served on the City Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission from July 2009 through May 2023. And whereas, Greg Larson has served as chair of the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission from June 2013 through May 2023. And whereas, Greg Larson, by his thoughtful consideration of matters before the commission, has served the best interests of the City of Gunnison, resulting in substantial benefits to the citizens of today and the future. And whereas, during his service on the Planning and Zoning Commission, Greg participated in the development and passage of the Vantile Ranch Management Plan and Vantile Ranch PUD and Annexation, review of the Gunnison Rising PUD Development Standards and Annexation 2009, and major change to Gunnison Rising PUD, the city's sign code, the non-motorized transportation plan, review and revision of the land development code, Gunnison Vibrancy Initiative, the West Gunnison Park and Master Plan, Comprehensive Plan 2030, and review participation in processing numerous land use applications. And whereas, Greg Larson has unselfishly given his time and sound judgment to successfully carry out the duties of Planning and Zoning Commissioner. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Planning and Zoning Commission of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, that Section 1, Greg Larson is hereby commended and thanked for his generous donation of time, knowledge, and dedicated service to the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission. And Section 2, Greg Larson is wished continuous success and good fortune in future endeavors. Introduced, read, passed, and adopted this 23rd day of May in 2023.
We haven't done so. I'll make the motion to adopt it.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded, Greg. Thank you again so much for all your service. That is a lengthy list.
We've been busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move it to a vote. We still need a. Give me 1 second, Andy. Erica?
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gerwitz?
I think so, yes.
Freeburg?
Yes.
So carried.
Great. Thank you. Greg, any words to share with us?
Thank you, everybody, in that. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy doing it, but time to dive into a different endeavor now. Thank you.
Best wishes with that. And and before
just
Greg,
give me a call, be happy to stop.
Greg, before you head out, we've got a quick comment
from. Can I say something?
Please.
My vice chair.
I've been on the board with Greg for a long time, and I wanted to say one of the nice things about him in being chairman is he always made people feel very comfortable who came up and talked before us, and he did a great job of that. And he made people feel comfortable and carried on well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great job.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you,
Greg.
Thank you.
Enjoy your free time.
I want to go have dinner.
All right. Great. We'll move into the next item, which is Ordinance Number 5, Series 2023, on second reading.
I'll introduce Ordinance Number 5, Series 2023, on second reading, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, repealing Ordinance Number 7, Series 1992. I'll move its adoption so you get rid of my signature from 92.
I'll second the motion.
The motion has been moved and seconded. Any additional input from anybody? No? Erica?
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gerwitz?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
So carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Have a good night.
Everybody out of the room.
Yeah.
All right. Now we'll move into Ordinance Number 6, Series 2023, on first reading.
I'll introduce Ordinance Number 6, Series 2023, on first reading, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, changing the zoning district classification of Parcel 2, Sawtooth Phase 1 boundary line adjustment from industrial to R3 multifamily, and amending the official zoning map of the city of Gunnison, Colorado. And I'll move adoption of ordinance number 6, series 2023 on first reading.
I'll second.
Motion has been moved and seconded. Anton, any additional information or input from you on this one?
Yeah, I would just reiterate what was said by a lot of members of the public and, you know, was, I think, clearly included in your packet. This proposal is in service to a lot of the content of the comprehensive plan, also to City Council's strategic plan, as well as the Gunnison County strategic plan. We think it's in our best interest to develop higher density within city limits where we have access to existing utilities, and we believe it's the step in the right direction.
Great. Thank you much, Anton.
Can I answer something, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, you may.
just want to be clear that tonight's application is for the rezoning only. So if the rezoning is approved, there will be a site development review process that will take place between the city and the county. And that's where things like traffic and sidewalks and number of units and rents and those kinds of things will come into play. But those aren't things that are part of tonight. Tonight is merely the rezoning component.
Thank you much for that clarification, Gavin. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anton. Council, any thoughts that you'd like to share on this one?
Yeah, I do.
Please.
I mean, it's reading through all the information in the packet, it's obvious that we need the housing and workforce and affordable housing. I think this really fits the bill for that. And also, it helps prevent urban sprawl. If we don't do it here, where do we do it that, you know, it's not, there's some property there that could be developed, I think. I do have a big concern about the traffic and the speed of traffic down there. And with all these additional folks living down there, I really think that we need to mitigate that in some way. I'm not sure how, but, you know, I think the Burts have got a real concern down there, and they've voiced that in the past. It's been an issue down there in the past, and I think that needs to be, you know, looked at when we look at this later down the road. Unfortunately, I do think that this is a good fit. The R3 is a good fit for that area. So that's a couple comments I wanted to make there.
Great. Thank you much, Bill. Yep. Jim?
Well, I do have some concerns about this. The land was designed and donated for totally different reasons, which not everybody in this room would know or maybe even care about, but it was for the fairgrounds and for future growth, and that's just going to stifle that growing. There are other areas. We have Gunnison Rising that we could be putting stuff in. There's some property that Fading West was going to put housing in on Denver. And because of this, I've been told they've elected not to build there through private sector. And, you know, the public input on this, the complaints that I've gotten, I would like for the county to make it clear that the city really has no say in this. They can do whatever they want with or without this. And as far as I'm concerned, and yes, I'm on my way out, so I'm going to say what I feel, but I'm going to try to be very diplomatic. That you don't have to do anything. I was involved with the airport down there. I was fire chief when you built the new airport, and it didn't matter what the city wanted to do at that time, and you're absolutely doing the same thing here. And I don't think it's fair to the community for no public input. And I emphatically am going to vote no on this, and I'm certain I'll be the only one. But I do agree that we need the housing. I disagree running down mobile home parks. Come see mine one of these days. It's very nice. And it's not a mobile home park. It's rentals. And I'm not upset. I'm just saying. But the bottom line is there could have been other options done if people would have put thought and consideration to the heritage of our community. And for those of you that haven't been here for 60-some years that knows what that fairgrounds means to a lot of the old-timers and maybe none of the new-timers, that you're not putting any thoughtfulness to our heritage. And heritages don't change. maybe lifestyles do. But that's it. No hard feelings on my part, because I'm out of here anyway. Not my choice. And thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Mallory.
Thanks, Jim. I think, yeah, good points there that, you know, the city is limited in what the county does with the land. And I, for one, think housing and dense housing is incredibly important at this time. Change is hard. I think, you know, that Andy Sovic made some really good points last meeting when we discussed the water treatment plant. Is change is hard, and yes, communities are fluid, and our needs change. And I guess most of my questions and thoughts are relating to sidewalks and traffic control and those sorts of multimodal connections as density increases in certain areas of town, and most of that is on the city of planning. And I also wanted to bring up a good point from Julie Robinson again of the city maybe looking at requiring that properties are built out to maximum density. Julie Robinson with Habitat for Humanity had mentioned how just on the Habitat property, I believe it's zoned R3, and they're mostly building single-family homes down there. And her question was, why are we even allowed to do this when housing is such a crisis? Why are we allowed to build single-family on R3 zoning? So just want to keep that front of mind. And, and I think also this rezoning really came from us too, of let's make this development compliant so there's no issues in the future should land sell, etc. Just, you know, making sure we're doing our due diligence. And I really appreciate the county working with us on this zoning change, and I know it's sort of lengthened timelines a little bit, and just glad to be getting out of the weeds on this and getting some housing on the ground. Felt very rambly, but thank you.
It was a little rambly.
You did awesome. Better than me. Better than me.
It was better than Jim's.
Yes.
Well, <Wait a minute. laughs> other Jim. Nope. Okay. Great. Well, I'll take the opportunity to thank the county for working together through this, meeting the challenges, and continuing to build relationships moving forward. I think it's important to continue communicating thoughtfully and serve our collective constituents. I think this is an incredibly important component to moving the puzzle around and trying to meet some of the more critical necessities of our community. And while it's, like many of the projects we take on and private takes on, not perfect, it's one drop in the bucket that will help. There are certainly a lot of challenges that will come with this, traffic in particular, and connectivity along sidewalks. But I think at least getting some heads in beds at some point in the near future will be the most critical part. So that's all I've got. Okay. So what do we need here?
A vote.
A vote.
And then just Mary Bird online had mentioned, encouraged people to come down and watch the traffic in that area as it moves forward.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate your input. So we will move into...
We have a motion and a second.
Yep. Erica?
Logan?
Yes.
Gowicks?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
No.
Plata?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you much. Okay, next item on the agenda will be Ordinance Number 7, Series 2023 on first reading. For those leaving, thank you all for being here tonight.
Where are you all going? Come on.
We have like five more resolutions to get through. No? Okay. Ordinance number 7, series 2023 on first reading.
I'll introduce ordinance number 7, series 2023, first reading. Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, approving a lease purchase financing to provide funds to finance utility cost savings measures and facility improvement measures and in connection therewith authorizing and approving a site lease, a lease purchase agreement, and other documentation relating to the financing and providing other details in connection with financing. And I will move its adoption.
This is an exciting one. Go ahead.
I'll second.
My mechanics are all off today. I'm really sorry, everyone. It has been moved and seconded.
You can't see outside, I think.
Class case of emotions. Ben.
Yeah, so this, I know this looks like a lot. It's pushing 300 pages of documentation that over the course of two meetings will require eight motions or actions, I should say. So this isn't new. We've talked about these energy conservation measures for nearly a year now as we've worked through this investment grade audit to be in compliance with the state statute that allows us to enter into this lease purchase agreement that is funded through the energy savings, energy costs avoided by lower utility bills. So what this entails, and we've gone through the projects a number of times, but it's solar arrays on five of our facilities. It's new lighting at our softball fields, which is a primary element of this. A variety of improvements for lighting, including like replacement of the the lights in here with LEDs, retrofitting our HVAC systems that are inefficient, and various just small improvements like weatherization and things that just make sense in terms of energy efficiency and just making sure we're responsible with city dollars. So this debt that, if approved, that we would enter into is financed by avoided operational costs and utility efficiency savings. So with that, there's a lot of complicated pieces that come along with this, and we understand there's some pieces that may be a little bit confusing to most people, but essentially the statute allows us to enter into a lease purchase agreement for this. This ordinance is a parameters ordinance that gives you a range that we can work within to enter into this debt. And on second reading on June 13th, we'll have those bids back. And Troy Bernberg with Northland Securities is online to talk with us as well, answer any questions. But we'll have bids back, and we'll know exactly what our terms are at second reading. And that will also inform the scope that we can accomplish within that and the interest rate that we are provided with those bids so that you have some assurances of what you're actually signing on to. Right now we're looking at a range. We're hopeful that 4.5% is something that is attainable. So we'll see depending on what is turned in there. But typically, a lease purchase agreement would be financing equipment and improvements, and those specific equipment and improvements are the collateral for that debt. In this situation, with the interest rates the way they are, we're trying to buy down that rate a little bit. And in order to do that, we talked about at the last meeting, instead of having a bank have collateral of individual lights here in this room and a lot of little minutiae that's hard to keep track of. It's something that they don't want to deal with. Honestly, it's not something I want to deal with either. So a way that you do is you substitute the collateral. And so what we've got included in here is a substitution of the police station and the city shop. And it's not, so in the event of default, so the city, we're going to have the money to pay this loan payment because it's guaranteed through the savings and the construction. If we don't realize those savings, McKinstry has to cut us a check.
What if they fail?
That's a possibility too. They are a large company. I mean, they're one of 13 ESCOs that are certified through the state of Colorado. And that's only on the guarantee part. So they still have to guarantee, and this has already been audited by the State of Colorado Energy Office. They've gone through this draft performance contract. They've gone through this investment-grade audit that is in your packet. And so we feel like we've vetted the the engineered savings here, so it's a matter of getting the construction. We'll have the money in our bank account, and we won't be releasing those until the construction is complete, and we'll hold back retainage and all the things that protect the city from risk in terms of construction. Once it's constructed, yeah, if McKinstry left after 2 years and for some reason there wasn't savings, you wouldn't have no savings. You've done the improvements. We're not going to pay until we have those installed. So that being said, we're going to have the money to make those payments. But let's say that you had some kind of situation where the city was in default. What that means is rather than a fee simple interest in those, the police department and the city shop, that bank would have a leasehold interest in that. So they basically would be leasing the police department and the city shop back to the city. They do not own those facilities, but if for some reason we weren't making lease payments, they could lease it out to some other occupant or something, like office space or something like that. So it is the collateral. We can substitute that collateral, so if for some reason we want to take on debt to improve the police station, we can switch it out with some other collateral that's equal to that. We also are going to put in the bid documents the possibility of, as we make payments, to release one of those facilities as we work through repayment on the principal. So I think that's kind of the crux of this. What we're asking for tonight is just to accept the investment grade audit, which is just a look at all the buildings they went through with fine-tooth comb to find energy conservation measures that repay themselves. So you find all those details in there. This is first reading of that parameters ordinance that allows us to take on these bids and gather those and be poised to actually execute the debt at your next meeting. And then that's really what we're asking for tonight. The other elements that are in the packet, which include the site lease and the lease agreement, and the energy performance contract are in draft form. Those will change slightly depending on what our bids are. If for some reason our interest rates are high, like up above 5%, we may still need to look at cutting some scope out to make it pencil out. But I think we're fairly close with the total contract price at just over $4 million, which would include financing of bond issuance costs and cost of issuance, with Troy working on, getting these bids out. And so with that, I think that's most of the details. Troy, did I miss anything?
You did not, Ben. Great, comprehensive overview.
And so Troy's here for technical questions, too. I know this is kind of a complicated financing mechanism, and so something that you're not probably that used to seeing. It's pretty common as far as these kind of projects across the state, but it is something that the city doesn't regularly enter into. The county has done a number of these. They're on round two of these. What's kind of nice is once you get the debt paid off, you're still realizing the savings from those improvements, and a lot of places will kind of snowball effect that, put that loan payment that you were making into another energy performance contract to finance additional improvements and kind of just keeping it. It's sort of like a snowball effect on energy conservation savings. So that's something we can talk about. It's 20 years down the road.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Any questions for Ben or Troy?
Kathy, did you read all 300 pages?
I read the materials in the packet.
Yes. Just to be clear, too, I mean, Troy has been working great with this on us and has been a partner with us on a lot of projects, but we also have been consulting with QTAC Rock, specifically Tom Peltz, who drafted the site lease, the lease agreement, and this ordinance. And so we have had significant legal counsel on this as well.
Does using this type of funding mechanism preclude us from any other sort of funding that we might seek for any projects?
Not funding. It would cause a little bit of a hurdle if we want to issue debt on these facilities that we're encumbering. So that's one of the other reasons for changing the collateral, is we actually would have a uniform commercial code encumbrance on every single building that received improvements. And this kind of isolates that debt into two buildings rather than being spread across all of our facilities. But yes, that would cause a problem. But like I said, if for some reason we want to issue debt for those buildings, we can switch it. And again, the example is that Montrose did this recently. They had an encumbrance on their city hall, and I don't know why they're doing this, but they're selling their city hall in Montrose. And so they've had to substitute that collateral so that they can release that encumbrance on their city hall and make it so they can sell it. But as far as like grants or anything like that, there's no strings attached or anything like that. In fact, this is opening the door for many grants. We have almost a $750,000 grant with DOLA that's supporting this. We're hopeful to get a grant from Homeland Security to help us install the generator at the community center to make that a true emergency shelter for our community. So it's actually opening the door for some funding sources.
Great. Jim?
We need to do the first reading, and then we need to adopt the audit.
Okay. Do we have a first reading?
Yeah.
Well, there's, so yeah, there's...
I've got a count of the vote. That's
first all. And a second has been made.
Oh, thank you.
So we need a vote. We need a vote on the ordinance, and then...
For the record, I was with both my kids for 8 days by myself. That ended 2 hours ago.
Yeah. So. Maybe we need one of them here.
A lot of questions. I appreciate everyone's patience and support through this. We have a first and second. Erica?
Gelix?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Upstead.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
I will make a motion to accept the investment grade audit and a report presented by McKinstry.
I'll second.
Motion has been moved and seconded. Any further comments, questions?
Yes, essentially this is the groundwork that's necessary for the debt to be issued.
And I did fail to point out that Brian and Aaron from McKinstry are also on the call, and I don't know, Brian and Aaron, did you have anything to add? And we appreciate all their efforts, and right this last bit, we've had the rising interest rates that has made this project become very complicated at the end as we cross the finish line, which is also the start line for construction. But anything that Aaron or Brian that you wanted to add that I missed in that discussion?
I don't have anything, Ben. I thought you did a nice job summarizing everything there. So we just kind of wanted to make ourselves available in case any, you know, technical questions came up on the project. So, you know, good job.
And they will be here in person, I think, at the next meeting for the actual approval of the project itself, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it, all the good work that you guys are doing in the city. It's very refreshing, and we're happy to be on board and be partnering with you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? Nope. Erica?
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Upstein?
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Alex?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Brian, Aaron, Troy, Ben, everyone.
Thank you all. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Have a great night.
We will now move into... Do you need a break?
No.
Okay. We'll move into Ordinance Number 8, Series 2023 on first reading.
I'll introduce Ordinance Number 8, Series 2023, first reading, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, amending the work in the right-of-way permit provisions contained in Sections 9.10.010 and making corresponding amendments in Sections 12.10.030 of the Gunnison Municipal Code, and I'll move its adoption.
So there's a missing...
Is there a missing piece in it?
Yeah, the title didn't transfer right. It's 12-10-30 and also 12-20-30. So the actual ordinance is fine, but the
the
background part is... Yeah.
So there needs to be an addition of 12-20-30?
Yeah.
Okay, so amended.
Thank you.
Oh, now is there a second?
Moved first and...
I'll second.
Seconded. Thank you. Here with us, GIS Tech, Lisa Starkenbaum. Thank you for being here this evening.
Hi. So I'm here to tell you, I guess, summarize our process for right-of-way permits and answer any questions you might have. What we would like to do is get the authority to charge a expedited right-of-way permit fee, as well as hold a bond to ensure that any contractors working in the right-of-way return the surface back to its pre-dig condition. They're responsible to, if they're cutting pavement, they have to patch the pavements and do proper compaction, and sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. So the bond would just be to ensure that that is happening, and if it they do not return it, would call on the bond to pay for the materials and the labor. The expedited permit fee, that would not be for any type of a person that needs to repair a utility, say they're out of sewer or water. That's exempt. It's only people that are turning in their permit fee ahead of the, or without the 7-day review period that we ask. Usually the people that are doing that, it's not because of any kind of burden that they have. It's because, basically and honestly, it's because of lack of planning on their part. And then they want us to turn it around, you know, like in 24 hours, which is kind of hard because there's 4 or 5 people that need to look at those, all the superintendents and the public work director. They all need to look at the right-of-way permits and see how that's affecting the utilities and the streets. So usually these permits can be turned around in a few days, but sometimes they're more intensive to look at. So that's why we ask for the 7 days. Do you have any other questions or need any other clarification?
About how many of these do you process during the season?
A season? Probably, it's increasing exponentially the last few years. Probably 60.
Wow.
I think we did close to 60 last year. And the way this year's starting out, it might even be more.
And, sorry, go ahead. Any other questions?
I guess as a worker in the service industry, I feel the pressure of rush jobs a lot, so I can sympathize with that. And seems if we don't give the 7 days for all the necessary people to review, that some mistakes could be made and things could slip by.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know that we're doing our best to help people build as quickly as they can. And I'm sure, you know, we've got great staff, and I'm sure people are doing their reviews as quickly as possible. Is there a time limit on reviews, or generally how long do we have it, you know, in our department planning? Like, for me, I'm like, oh, I'll return an email within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Do we have that sort of set parameter around turning permits?
Well, we ask for a 7-day review, and that's 7 calendar days. So if someone turns one in, say, today, we'd have it back to them by next Tuesday, and usually sooner. It's okay. Usually done sooner than that. So as soon as they come in, we get them processed and out to all the people to look at, all the superintendents to look at within the same day. And then they usually can look at them within a day to 2 days, depending on their workload and if they're in the office.
Great.
And it's really to facilitate, sometimes we have urgent projects that we're having to drop to deal with these. Otherwise, the contractor just starts digging into our utility lines and, you know, causing damage to our infrastructure. And so a lot of times they're working on an emergency water line break or something. They have to break away from that to go deal with something that really was a lack of planning type issue. So
the other thing, if they're digging, they're legally required to get locates done through the Colorado Notification Center. So, and that's 48 hours. Of course, unless it's an emergency, which is a utility outage. So they need to be planning for this and for on a number of accounts. So, but it, sometimes we've had people turn them in 2 o'clock in the afternoon and want to start digging at 7 a.m. the next morning. So, you know, usually if someone calls and says, you know, I want to do this and 3 or 4 days, that's, we're more than willing to help accommodate that, but it's just the ones that we really need to look at intensively, and they run them really quick.
So I charge rush fees too, so I understand the $1,000 rush fee, but I just wanted to make sure that in this ordinance there's nothing placing an additional financial burden on projects, just because we know that all costs are escalating everywhere. Was there anything in this that would add costs to somebody submitting a permit and just wanting the typical 7-day turnaround?
No, the typical right-of-way permit is staying the same that we've been charging. And it's based on the extents of the excavation. So basically how much pavement they're removing or how much sidewalk they're removing, that's what we base the fee on. And that will stay the same. It's just the expedited permit fee. And we do ask for a bond now, but it's never been set in ordinance that we have the authority to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Hey, Mallory, can I say one thing?
Yes.
So, like, when the person comes in at 2 that afternoon and wants to dig the next day, which happens a lot, we're trying to discourage that. So we feel like that, you know, if you haven't planned properly and you have to have that done, then you should pay for that, because then what we have to do is we have to stop what we're doing. And then we have to coordinate with all the supers to review it and make sure it's all the way it needs to go. It takes time to do that. So we don't really like to do that because it disrupts our operation. But if it's just an absolute necessity, then you pay the $1,000. But normally you just go through the normal process. And generally, like Lisa said, you know, 3 to 4 days, we can generally turn those things back around pretty easy, and it only cost you $60. So we just want to encourage that behavior.
Well, I get it. I've been dealing with it the last few weeks, so yes.
Thank you for that, David. Any additional comments or questions from your mind?
No.
Well, Jim? Okay. I've got a couple of clarifying questions. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, this would be a change to create an expedited system for someone to request the permit, yes?
Yes. And a so permit fee, yes.
A permit fee for an expedited.
Expedited, okay. Yes.
What is the just normal fee timeline and requirements of someone that's looking to do it and someone that has planned well ahead of time to go through the process?
So a permit fee is $60, a minimum of $60, and then it is an additional fee of either $5 per square foot if they're removing asphalt or concrete, a hard surface, or $1 per square foot if they're removing a granular surface.
Okay.
So then what?
And then how long does it take for a normal process?
Normally, we have them turned around before the 7 days. So I would say an average of 4 days.
Okay. And
the ones that take longer are if they're doing directional boring and they need a an engineered subsurface plan. So that takes more time for Cody to review and the other superintendents to review. And then we also require we want the sewer to be CCTV'd so that we ensure they didn't get their wire in our sewer and that type of thing. And then we want when they start filling in their hole, we want it to ensure that they've compacted and properly. So we want them to call for inspections.
Okay. And so the regular time frame is around 3 to 4 days, you're saying?
Seven.
On average, it takes about 3 to 4 days, up to seven. But the expedited time frame is also 7 days. So
The expedited, I do think that's in here.
If it's a person is asking for a permit less than 7 days prior to the intention to excavate, and there's no emergency.
So how is... And sorry, I'm just not... How is that different then from the typical process?
Well,
the typical process takes 3 to 4 days.
You apply 7 days prior, and you might get your permit sooner than that, but it could be 7 days.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Then to the regular process again, because I find this bond concept to be an important one in both sides of it, the expedited and the non-expedited, because I don't know exactly which project brought this action about, but I know of the one over on West Denver where the street is just a mess now. What teeth do we have to hold people accountable during the regular process if they did just apply for a regular permit and dug our streets? Do we have anything?
Well, the bond would be what would ensure the return of the surface to its pre-dig condition.
Right. So if they didn't do the work, the city could call in the security and finish the work.
Sure, but
properly.
And that applies to both the expedited and...
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Is there a point where we're also discussing criminal penalties for not getting one permit?
If they don't get a permit, then that's a citation into municipal court.
And also if they don't repair it would be...
Right. If they didn't get a permit, they didn't repair it after the fact, they can be subject to a stop work order and also citation.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Do we have...
You have a first and a second.
First and a second. Thank you. Erica?
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gilwix?
Yes.
So carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Good night, Lisa.
Okay. We're moving to agenda item G, resolution number 10, series 2023.
I'll introduce resolution number 10, series 2023, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Gunnison, Colorado, rescheduling the June 27th, 2023 regular session meeting to June 20th, 2023. And I move to adopt.
I'll second.
Motion has been moved and seconded. Any concerns with that date? Does that work? Okay. Erica?
Miles?
Abstain.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gilwix?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you all. Next item, funds to study a non-dam feature impacting the floodplain map. Here with us, Community Development Director, Mr. Anton Sinkwich, City Engineer, Cody Tusing, and Building Official, Eric Jansen. How are you, Eric?
Good.
Good. Thanks for being here.
How's everybody doing?
Terrific.
Doing well. Hey, Cody. Thanks for being here. Good.
Cody,
we see you online, Anton. Take it away, John.
Hey, well, just
quick introduction. I'll turn it over to these two gentlemen. You know, we wanted to bring a formal request to council to consider the need for funding to facilitate a feasibility study of an existing dam-like structure that's located past the west end of Spencer on County Road 15. This structure was built in the floodplain next to the Gunnison River almost 40 years ago, and this feasibility study is necessary before it could be considered for certification by FEMA and subsequently incorporated into the new flood insurance rate maps that are currently being created. If this dam-like structure can be certified, it would directly benefit approximately 100 properties downstream in the city of Gunnison by removing them from the 1% annual chance floodplain, or the 100-year floodplain, on the new flood insurance rate maps. So we've received a engineering evaluation proposal for the necessary assessment work in the amount of $49,500. And Cody and Eric could speak to, you know, some of the more technical details associated with this request.
Great. Thank you, Anton.
Technical mm-hmm. details?
Okay. Well, right now, starting in about 2019, 2020, FEMA has been updating their flood maps. They're going through two processes, base level engineering and a physical map revision. Physical map revision is going to be for City of Gunnison and Crested Butte. And that includes utilizing new surface information from LIDAR that was flown over the entire county, so they have a better contour map. While they were going through this process, the city and other officials have been involved, and they found that there was a structure on the south boundary of the Vantel Ranch west of County Road 13.
15.
Yep. And what they had noticed is that they've dug into the history, and in 1984 during the floods, that was built during a flood event. So it's not considered a certified structure. It's called a non-dam feature. So typically a levee is going to be parallel to the river. A dam is going to be perpendicular and have an outlet structure and overflow. This doesn't impede the flow of the river. It's just perpendicular to flow. It will back water up, but the water can exit through the back to the river. It doesn't function like a dam. It doesn't store water. So it's a non-dam feature, and that's important that's how you would have to review it to certify it. But so they had already done a first-leveled 2D hydraulic model through the city of Gunnison, and when they found this structure, it couldn't be certified, so they had to remove it from there as if it's not there, because they see it as something built under duress, could fail, wasn't built to any specifications that they know of, so they can't really count on it. They're not gonna. So they removed it, and then it actually added 100 approximately 100 properties that were formerly out with it in place. So it's been sitting there for 38 years. We feel like it does have some competency, but in order to have it certified, we need to do some evaluations, legal survey, topo survey. We have the upstream, downstream water surface elevation, so there's a bit of an analysis and geotechnical that goes into it. What the study would tell us is if, one, it does or does not meet the requirements of this non-dam structure that has a specific set of criteria from FEMA. If it does not, it'll develop a list, it's almost a CIP of what you would have to do. Maybe it doesn't have enough freeboard above the high water. Maybe we would want to put riprap on it. There's a headgate pipeline structure that goes through for irrigation. Maybe we improve that. So they'll develop a list of criteria that would be needed to get it into that. FEMA's aware of this. They actually have two hydraulic models with and without it. So they've been good to work with. If we could get it certified within the next, I think, 16, 18 months, it could be incorporated in the new physical map that will be coming out. And those properties would not have to get flood insurance if they had a federally backed mortgage. If it took a little longer than that to do the work needed to bring in a certification, the maps will be revised again when they do the base level engineering, which is countywide. So there will be a second opportunity if the amount of rehab work is too much to bite off in 1 year or so.
And what's the so what on the 100 properties? What's the difference in flood insurance? Typically, I know that varies, but.
Yeah, I think it's a couple thousand a year, correct?
So, yeah, if you have a bunch of properties that are currently enjoying no flood insurance requirements, and then all of a sudden, when these new maps come out, they're all this, all of a sudden they're in the special flood hazard area, and then they have to get flood insurance, there's going to be some civil unrest at that point in time, I would think. So it just seems, and I went out there today and just walked the thing myself just to check it out, and it is a substantial earth and berm structure. Drops off about 6 or 7 feet on both sides. It's got a trail down the middle of the thing. It's a pretty substantial structure that I think merits some more looking into to see if it's something that's feasible to get certified so that we can, in the end, accommodate those 100 properties by keeping them out of the floodplain.
Okay.
So you're saying it wouldn't remove 100 properties that are currently in floodplain, it would keep 100 properties from being designated.
Correct.
In the new map.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so, can we take those insurance savings and put them into streets?
The existing map currently out of the floodplain, new map without this feature being shown on it, they're all of a sudden they're in the floodplain.
And it's probably important and worth noting that some of those 100 parcels are undeveloped larger parcels that have the potential to having many more parcels or,
correct,
you know,
yeah,
structures built on them.
Hmm. Just adjacent or just south of it. You,
like 20 acres,
yeah,
or 27 acres.
I think
acres.
I counted like, yeah, 25 or something like that.
The one's Meldrum Zone?
Meldrum Zone just north of this structure. Oh, no, sorry.
South.
Just south of the structure, just north of it is Vantile Ranch. And there is some determination that needs to be made exactly whose property this thing is on as well. It's kind of unclear at this point, so I think there's going to have to be some survey work done to actually determine if it's on the Meldrum's property or if it's on city property before we even think about doing anything with it or try and get an easement or something like that going.
I'll pull it. Jim over here, I was involved in doing that. There was awful long nights.
Yeah,
and,
so done at night.
Yeah.
And, done under duress to keep things from flooding, and it's held up for this long, and just today looking at it, it looks like it's, you know,
it'll hold
it's
up.
Still there kind of thing. It's not,
I was driving
it's not,
truck.
It's not eroding or deteriorating or anything like that, so I think it does justify looking into it a little bit more to see if it is something that we can potentially get certified for the final outcome of keeping a bunch of properties out of the special flood hazard area.
And what we was told at the time, which I know doesn't make any difference, but that was supposedly city property, and if the road was ever built to go across the highway there, that would just be part of it. So.
And that's one of the things we want to look at. It almost looks as if it's aligned off Spencer, like it could have been old right-of-way that maybe got vacated,
yeah,
or something.
That's
but
what we was told at the time. Mm. And nobody, well, everybody was getting flooded. The nursing home was being sandbagged at that time and everything. So, but yeah, this will be great for the people with insurance. So.
I guess another fact of the matter is that, in my mind, it's been there, it's been functioning as it should kind of thing. So even if after this, if we go through this analysis and they determine that it can't be certified, it's still going to be an effective diversion technique for the river if there ever is a flood. And it may not be on the map. It may put those other properties in the special flood hazard area, but the fact of the matter is that structure is doing what it's supposed to do kind of thing. So the life safety side of things are still there.
Yeah, it's certainly seen some high flows between 84 and now.
So and the funding would be your strategic plan implementation reserve would be a suggestion. While this isn't in your strategic plan specifically, you know, it is protection of property, which kind of plays in with the infrastructure elements, and we've kind of used that as, you know, your fund for discretionary items that come up through the year. So here's the impact of that, you'd have 182,000 remaining.
Any other questions? I've got one question, and that is just, I know this is long ways away, but depending on the outcome of this, these properties may need flood insurance or not. Have the owners of these parcels been communicated with in regards to that possibility?
FEMA has a pretty lengthy process. Once they establish the map, there's a lot of front-end work on the design in terms of getting the map correct and proofing the model before they start reaching out to properties. But yeah, there's a notification system that's going to go out because there are people that, regardless of this, are going to be in it. While some people have gone out, other people are going in. I've seen areas that are south of the Highway 50 bridges that are going to be in it. Changes to the floodway are happening. It'll be a substantial change. There's been outreach. There's a website that's available that you can look at the current effective, and that's the important term, the effective map. That's the 2003 study. 2013 study, and so you can look what it looks like today, and then you can look at the first version of the physical map revision, which essentially has the structure in it, and then there's a second version of the physical map revision, which doesn't have it in it, and you can zoom all around and look at the detail. If you're outside of the city, there's another link for the base level engineering, where they look at upland hydrology and look at a 100-year event. You can kind of see properties beyond the city, but it's... They've had a lot of stakeholders involved from different counties and or members of the county, city.
Thank you, Cody. And Ben, thanks for that update on the strategic plan or strategic fund. I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as we consider this.
Yeah, I think it's just important to note that with it being certified, it benefits all those property owners. Whether they need to have flood insurance or not is a different story, because you're only required to have flood insurance if you have a federally backed mortgage on your home or your property. If you bought it outright, it's your option whether or not you get flood insurance or not. So the actual amount of people that are going to be affected by this could be a lot less than that 100. That's just the number of properties that will now be in the special flood hazard area if this doesn't get certified.
The more likely scenario is that areas which are currently open get converted into housing or other uses, and that's where the impact would be most likely to happen. Certainly, if people own, you're right, if it's required if you have a federal loan against your property.
There is a process. If it gets mapped and the property or the structure is in the blue, that special zone, there's the LOMA process, letter of map amendment, which can be done. It takes an engineer survey to go in and look at the conditions of the house relative to the water surface. But these would effectively remove the blue from some of these properties. So when they go to sell them, they're not going to get hit with, you're in a floodplain, you need a LOMA, things like that. It's definitely easier on the property because these maps don't get revised very often. We're probably going to see this effective in the end of 2024, maybe early 2025.
And from 2013, so.
And my understanding is that one of the things that's happening is they're also looking at the traditional 100 flood levels are probably no longer adequate in terms of how they're looking at it given rise and changes in weather patterns and so forth. So there probably will be additional changes that regardless of this particular feature.
Yeah, this will be substantial because 2013 was based on the old map. It basically digitized one that was made on paper that was probably done through photogrammetry and very inaccurate topos. And now they have 4-inch precision vertical on the LIDAR, so it's very precise.
The old topo that was running through here went back to somewhere 59, 60, somewhere in there was what they were using. So landforms have changed since then.
The river changes constantly, yep. too.
Yep. So. Okay. Do we have any additional questions?
No.
We have a motion. We have two actions requested.
I'll move to approve funding not to exceed $49,500 for the evaluation of the non-dam structure from Council Strategic Implementation Fund.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Erica?
Bata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
Gelwitz?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
So carried.
And do we have a second?
I'll motion? Move to authorize the city manager to execute an agreement with Wright Water Engineers Incorporated.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Erica?
Logan?
Yes.
Gelwitz?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
So carried.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank
Thanks,
you,
everybody.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. It's the right thing to do at this point in time. Good.
Right, thank you.
Yeah,
good catch.
I'm back here.
Here. All right, stay here with us, Cody. Next item is the City Stormwater Master Plan, and here with us, City Engineer Cody.
Okay, thank you all. So we don't have a single comprehensive stormwater plan for the city. There've been some smaller kind of sub-regional plans with development, but nothing comprehensive. We also have the City Stormwater Management Manual, which is referenced in Land Development Code. Essentially, every development in town is touched by that, from Sawtooth to Lazy K. Gunnison Rising is all falling under that. So what we've looked at is a two-phase approach. Using the same data that FEMA is using, the LIDAR, we want to evaluate stormwater through the system. We want to look at how it flows, what goes to Gunnison, what goes to Tamichi Creek, where the divide is, how our existing stormwater system handles that. We know a portion of our stormwater system conveys the ditch water. So if I have a 30-inch pipe, 24-inch pipe in there that has 6 inches of ditch water, I don't have the 30-inch pipes. So we want to look at those capacities. So that'll be kind of the more, this will be the more engineering nuts and bolts of evaluating flows, capacities, developing, looking at any areas that might be more prone to inundation during a 100-year event, low-lying areas. And then the second part of this is to kind of take direction from that and update our stormwater management manual. It's really in a draft form from 2012. It's coarse. It has not enough information on some and too much on others. It kind of looks like a how-to design your own stormwater system. So it's got way too much information there, and then it's got other stuff that people are saying, where exactly does it tell me how to do this? So that would be the second part that would be guided from this phase one, essentially.
Which is not included in this.
Yeah, not included. Mm-hmm. They will scope it as part of this, and they'll evaluate our manual and give us a cost estimate of what they think would be to evaluate this. This also develops a roadmap for the MS4, the Municipal Separate Storm Sewer Systems. That is, when we hit 10,000 in population, we will fall under EPA requirement for an MS4 permit, which requires total max daily limits, TMDLs, management plan, and we are draining into a impaired waterway. Tamichi Creek is on the state's 303D list of impaired waterways. So once we hit that threshold, we will need to be already moving forward and know how to. So that's part of the scope as well.
Does the scope include identifying areas which may cause inappropriate runoff that is where it may flow through and pull up chemicals or anything like that, or that there are places where there is excess?
Yeah, we can look at zone areas and like percent infill. Like there'll be a lot. We can parse that out and look at. But the main thing with the MS4 is we don't want to hit our threshold and then have not been prepared for it when we get there.
And I know that water quality becomes an issue, and how things get mixed together, and what impact we have on, especially the Tamichi versus what's upstream.
Yeah, we'll be looking at areas in the city that are already served well enough by the existing storm that maybe we can put in best management practices for water quality capture, but not require the on-site detention, which is costly for people if we have the capacity for it. And other areas we may need to look at if we want that to be waived, we would need to make some improvements to the storm. But as it stands, that generally is an impact a lot of people aren't expecting when they come in. It's, some areas we don't have storms, so they have full on-site detention. Some areas it's under, the capacity is limited, so they still have to detain while they slowly release it back. You know, the library was one. We didn't have the capacity there. So, okay. Broad impact by this.
Yeah. Any questions for Cody? All right. Well, do we have a motion?
I'll move to authorize the city manager to execute a contract for professional engineering services with HDR Engineering Incorporated for $149,667 as budgeted.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any additional comments, questions? Seeing none, Erica?
Gowicks?
Yes.
Freeburn?
Yes.
Miles?
Yes.
Plata?
Yes.
Logan?
Yes.
It's okay.
Thank you, Cody.
Hey. We'll share the findings with you guys when we get it up.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Cody.
Next item of the agenda, timeline of dates related to the coordinated election, November 7th, 2023.
Can we take a quick break before this?
And we will take a quick break before this, coming back from recess at 7:20 p.m.
Good.
Get our sillies out. We're back in session. The time is 7:24 p.m. We will now move into agenda item J, timeline of dates related to the coordinated election, November 7th, 2023. And to brief us is Erica.
So this is just a follow-up to a request that was made at the last meeting. I'm not speaking out of turn, but I think, okay.
Thank you.
So we, we'll have a, you know, the intention of Councillor Jim Miles plans to resign before the end of his term, which is done December 2025. And so with our coming election, we need, or not we, but some options on how to move forward with that vacancy needs to be considered. So I just outlined it within the charter on how those how a vacancy can be filled. And I think probably the two in the middle there are the ones that bring our most attention to that within the timeline that we're more than 90 days out from the next election, that we have, the council has the option to make an appointment, or then that would appointment would hold until the end of the councilor's term, which would be December 2025.
Mm-mm. So the next election.
Yeah, but whoever was elected would fulfill mine.
His term ends in 2025.
Right.
So the
vacancy shall be filled for any balance of the unexpired original term.
Yes. Correct. So we'd have 2 4-year and 2 2-year on the ballot.
Correct.
Right.
And I am going to can I speak now? I
mean, just real quick, let me
I'll shut up. I'm sorry, Eric.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
And then just kind of the other that's outlaid in the chamber is that if a council member resigns with 90 days less before the next regular election, that seat cannot be filled. So then, at that point in time, we have the election in November. We'd be elect, or the community, the city voters would be electing 4 council members rather than 3. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. And that's what I would like for transparency. I think it would make it easier on the rest of the council. So just the people do it. Nothing's on your back. I know it'll put a small burden on you, hopefully just a small burden, but I'd like to resign sometime after August 9th and before August 22nd. I have to be here the month of July and maybe the month of August to finish up my parents' estate, and I have commitments at Cattlemen's Days, which this may be the last Cattlemen's Days I can attend. Depending on how things go once I get down to a lower elevation. But I hope not. I hope to be here every July for that until I can no longer come here anyway. But I will be here through July and part of August, and hopefully my parents' estate will be settled then. If not, I don't know how I'm going to do that. But I, you know, if this is going to put too big of a burden on you people, I'd like to have a conversation, but I'm pretty adamant about staying and not having it go to, I want it to go to a vote of the people, not that the outcome would be much different. Hopefully we have at least four people running, and that way it's complete transparency. It's a vote of the people.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that.
Okay. And any questions? Any personal questions? I'd like in the next part. I'd be more than happy to, if you have any. But any other questions, I would be more than willing to answer here, as long as it's not too personal.
And I want to clarify, because I think Jim is right. Gelwick, Jim, is that a person appointed would serve until the election, and that vacancy would be filled for the balance of the unexpired term at the election.
Thank you.
So, in other words, if Sam Smith was appointed to fill Jim's seat, he could run, or someone else could run, but they still only are elected for the balance of Jim's term.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Just a small thank you.
I appreciate that clarification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're saying if we appointed someone, they wouldn't automatically serve until 2025.
They would serve until 2023.
Yeah, it would serve until 2023.
Okay. I want to make this crystal clear, just for my sake, really, because tonight is tough for me, apparently. If you quit today, and we appointed whomever, Sam Smith, they would serve until the next election, at which point four seats would still need to be elected.
Are you positive about that?
Yes.
Yes.
So if that's not going to change
anything,
it doesn't
change much.
Whatever. I mean, I will be here if you want me to be on council for as long as there's going to be four, because, you know, that if you guys have plans where somebody's not going to be able to leave town, I don't want to mess you people up.
What do you mean, you people?
My fellow brothers and sisters.
No, and I only wanted to clarify because honestly, it was just a little confusing to me. So that makes a great deal of sense.
Well, whoever wrote this charter wasn't interested in clarity.
I'm guessing it was a male.
1963, that section.
Okay. So, and then if Jim waited until after that 90-day period, we would not appoint anyone for that 2 month, that 90-day period, and someone would just run.
3 months.
At which point there are still four seats up for election.
Correct.
Mine included. It would be Mallory's, mine, this whole side of the board.
So really the long-term appointments, the long-term appointments come into play if he were to resign after the election. Then that person stays for a fairly long period of time.
Yeah, it's still
that's where I think
the appointment is always to the next election.
Right.
If you stayed until November.
Yeah, or to where somebody couldn't get on the ballot, you couldn't fill it.
Right.
Question. If there's four of us at a meeting and we vote two and two, does the mayor's vote hold the weight?
No. It is
it
the majority
fails.
Still.
It fails.
That's something to consider. That if there's only four of us, decision making may or may not get tricky.
Right.
And I'm willing to stay if you guys want me to. It would probably simplify my life if I just handed you my laptop and left today, because it's kind of hard for me to sit through these meetings. It's getting harder and harder every 2 weeks.
By the time we publish it and the time we appoint, it's almost August.
Yeah.
So it.
I wouldn't mind staying, but knowing that I will miss all of June, but I should be here for all of July and maybe even all of August. I mean, maybe. But then that I have to leave before a certain so it doesn't mess you up.
So there's no requirement for the council to go through the appointment process either. I'm assuming it's just they may at their discretion, correct? Kathy,
I don't think so.
Or are they required to go through that process?
The time is important, but if it's say prior to 90 days, they need to appoint. Or this is the part that always causes me
pause.
Laugh ironically,
if you can't fill it by appointment, you have to hold a special election. But
well,
if you didn't get people to nominate, you
then
know,
you'd have to have another election before the election.
Right. Well, yeah, but
so why don't
elect,
we just let me stay and I miss June and I make July and whatever I can in August and I resign no later than the August 22nd meeting. So, do I have to put that in writing, or can you just type that up for me and say, get out of here, Jim?
But somebody will be running for a one and a half year, two-year term.
Two will be running for right. two-year term.
Yeah.
Two lowest vote getters.
That's right.
Yeah. I want to make one thing clear to you, Jim.
I'm in trouble now.
quite the contrary. This is your decision. This is your seat, and we value your input through and through. Oh. So, whatever you believe to be best in your interest, make that the priority. And I'll speak on the board's behalf, but we truly appreciate you wanting to make this easy on us. But please, just do what is best for you. And if that August timeframe that you mentioned just now is best, let's go that route.
I think it'd be best, and if I miss a few more, don't hold it against me.
We haven't held any of the ones you've missed so far against
me. What the heck? I was scared for my first 5.5 years, and I got that stupid vaccine.
Health comes first. And,
but I do hear the Deep South is really nice in August.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? That's why I'm keeping the pusher. I am going to be leaving Florida someplace lower elevation. I'm going to finish traveling the lower 48, July, August, and September. Come up here for Cattlemen's Days, I'm hoping. And then Vermont and all those places.
Nice.
Okay.
Here's my plans, just so you know.
Well, I
don't know if I'll make it to Canada and Alaska, though, with the elevation.
Say low.
Maybe I'll just fly to Hawaii, though, instead. Let's call that good.
Yeah. Erica, I do appreciate this timeline review, because that is very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank
you. That is good.
Thank you
at
for the clarification.
End of it all, we will, regardless, have 4 seats up for election.
Correct.
2 for 4 years, 2 for 2 years.
Well, feel free to publish that, please. Please.
It's guaranteed.
The only guaranteed seats right now are Leah's and Jim's. Huh?
Yeah.
Yes, mine?
Yes.
Hey, you could be an old-timer here come November.
Yeah.
I'll just run for both.
Hey, you could do that. You're registered to vote here, right?
Sorry.
Over there, yeah.
I was speaking on election.
Get a petition. Get it circulated.
All right. There are no actions requested here. This is a timeline review. Very well. Then with that, we will move into staff and council reports, beginning with the guaranteed seat on the table, city attorney report, Kathy Foga.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. I do not have a report.
Thank you. Then we will move into city clerk schedule update.
Quite a few items that are starting to come up, just so you're aware of those. We've got our annual growler this weekend coming up, so or soon approaching, so that's exciting. And then I don't want to have to go through all of those events there, but a couple of things I do just want to highlight is that I'm looking at, along with our group who works with the Rural Welcoming Site Initiative, looking to hold an immigrant heritage celebration event and community potluck. We're still debating on that date a little bit, either June 14th or June 15th. So we'll get confirmation on that tomorrow. So hopefully that will be something that folks could attend. We did that last year as well, too. Of course, July 4th is coming up. And then also to mark your calendars for July 20th for City Fest. We'll do that over the lunch hour. And then one thing just to get out there, start promoting, is that we'll be looking, Ben and I, most likely the new city manager, Amanda Wilson, when she's on board too, we'll be hosting a council one-on-one, which will be that informational session for citizens who are interested in running for city council. You guys probably all attended that in the past. So start to promote that and let people know what seats are available. I'm also going to, I won't pass this around right now or go through it all, but Celeste from the Chamber did drop off a list of upcoming events, more valley-wide and community events, with predicted a number of people and participants that will be coming through town. So I'll share that information with you via email as well, too, so you get a sense of the number of visitors that we'll have coming through town for some of those events.
One other thing that's requested on there is that when Amanda starts, it would be great to have like a two-hour work session with the council just to talk about how do you want to communicate with her, what set some expectations, what are high priorities that you want to see accomplished in the strategic plan that she should really focus on and bring forward in the budget process if there's resources needed. And maybe like a two-hour work session would be great for that. We talked today, and potentially like a July 11th, maybe over a lunch might be something that we could look at, asking council if that's something that you have availability for, or if there's another date that would be July 11th on a council day, but maybe disconnect that from the council meeting schedule and maybe do like a lunch or something like that.
I can do that.
11th works for me.
I am pulling up my calendar, but I will say that I'll make it happen.
Okay. Other councilors?
I should be able to make it if I'm invited.
Here you are. Works for me.
Okay. So why don't we shoot for 11 o'clock? 11 to 1-ish? Okay. Does that work?
Yep.
Okay.
So what's something you want me at?
I guess it's really a discussion between the council and the manager, and I don't know if it would be assistive to have either Kathy or me. I think it's probably best to just have you all kind of discuss
just
that.
Just do it
and
without
just,
staff.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'm not
going to
put it on the calendar.
I think
one exception to that might be when Ben suggested this, I said that probably we ought to highlight at least where some of the strategic priorities that we've been working on are transitioning and need probably to be continued in the budget or where we're at. It might be helpful to have you there for two reasons. One, what the current status is that may be in something that's ongoing,
sure,
but also as a precursor to you having things in mind for budgeting.
If that's helpful, I'm certainly happy.
And it doesn't need to be the whole time, but...
Sure. I'll plan on it.
Okay.
Is that...
But I think that that would be useful for that reason.
Okay.
We said the 11th, noon
yep.
to 2?
11.
July 11th from 11 to 1.
11 to 1. Thank you.
Less noon
and
to 2.
And I am available that
okay.
day.
Yeah. Picket fence time. Three ones.
Thank you.
Great. That is great to hear. Any additional updates? Okay. Thank you, Erica.
Does anybody have any for me that...
Date-wise, yes. June 20th, the new June meeting, I don't believe I'll be here.
Okay.
My sister's coming into town. I'd like to spend time with her.
We need to make sure we've got three for a quorum then on that.
Right.
I'll be here.
So
we got 1, 2, 3. I'm still waiting on it because she may be getting here at noon, or she may be getting here like late night. So
okay.
But I'm pretty positive I'll be gone. I'll confirm as we get closer. And then otherwise, great. Thank you very much, Erica. We'll move to Ben. Any additions to your written report?
I have my written report, but one of them I am asking a little bit of direction from council, and that's concerning the community solar. And Jim Gelwicks is specifically interested in a free feasibility study that Mean could come conduct about the construction of a community production facility, specifically solar for power. It would be owned by Mean. We potentially could operate in some extent, but ultimately it would be there.
Well, there's two parts to that.
Yeah.
One actually would end up being owned by us in terms of the portion that would cover the gap that we have
for our max.
For yeah. our max. And it would be entered into a partnership with Sand Hill and Mean in that together. And so that's the first part, and then they would also be potentially looking at what you're describing, which would be a facility that would exceed that would be really a mean-owned thing that would be essentially...
So the question of the council is, do we have a consensus among at least three of you that you would like us to pursue that, at least bring some information about it and work in that direction? I didn't want to spin my wheels on that before I had council.
It's totally free?
Great.
And it could be a savings to the residents, correct, if it went in?
Well, it's really more about, you know, visibility. There's a few potentials, but I think the main one is that there is visibility that the city is participating in providing, you know, a renewable energy alternative that supports our town, potentially can provide some resiliency depending on how it's constructed in certain circumstances. But also we're, you know, in part of that game, not game, but effort to... construct more renewable energy mix in our portfolio, and it would be cited here locally.
And when that came up a number of months ago, I was all for that. Gunnison Rising, I thought, would be, not Gunnison Rising, Van Tiles would be the obvious place for it in my mind, if they could find a place on there to keep the public happy. I know I'm going out, but I'm all for it.
And one of the reasons why it is mostly no cost or feasibility is that they are, the group that's working with MEAN, which is Sand Hill, is actually coming to Colorado in the fall. So it can be actually be done this year, and you would have essentially what sort of feasibility? In other words, how do you get it into your transmission system? It's certainly, ultimately, when you're talking about supersizing the site to where we would be selling, or MEAN would be selling on the open market that is beyond the city limits of Gunnison, you have transmission line issues, which are WAPA. And they are the big dog in the house, and they tend to be one of the most inflexible. But what they're talking about is, A, coming in with a site that would meet our full authorized quota of alternative energy being produced locally, and what would be eventually a portion of distributed resources that MEAN itself would have ownership rights in, and we would have... probably immediate access to. Is it going to be something that would be immediately cheaper? Probably not. Over the long run, it would be capacity, and since it's in, it does not have additional costs that would come along. And that cost is, well, for those that are currently being evaluated this or just recently in the spring, the cost is exactly what that gap was in terms of what we, that 0.6%, if I remember correctly.
And my thought behind it being one of the coldest spots in the nation, sustainability. Yep. If something would happen to a transmission line, it could make the difference of life safety or not. Yep. So as big as we can go, I'd love to see for you guys.
And the other thing that is a concern of mine is that we've all dealt with the issue of level 3 EV chargers, and essentially they need electrical capacity equal to city market. Now, you can have 200 commercial properties pulling that kind, but then you put in 2,000 homes that start to pull larger amounts. Even if it's not a level 3, you're going to need in this country a lot more electricity than what we're currently producing. Yes. And so I think in anticipation, if electricity becomes a scarce resource, it will be something that commercial operators will put a lot of pressure in terms of what it costs a local area. And so anything that we can do in the cooperative and to assist WAPA in maintaining their electrical output becomes important in my mind. It will require, at this point, I asked if there was a program to sign up when I was in Nebraska. There isn't quite a program to sign up, but, and I started getting, well, maybe you need to talk to me, and then I need to talk to them. And then, and what I said is, well, guys, if we wrote you a letter saying we would like you to have a site review here and that we would be willing to show you various sites that we have, I think that the area around Well 10, we've also talked about an area out by the sewer plant, that those are there. The one talked about south of town, I don't think we'll ever get through archaeological issues on it. That simply by council sending a letter to both Sandhill and to Mean becomes a way to do that. And they both were satisfied with that as a way to do it right now, even though there's some fuzziness about it. But Sandhill was anxious to come here. As I said, they've been to Sydney, Nebraska already, and they are working with, I believe, Fort Morgan, Glenwood Springs, and some other places in Colorado as well. So it's something that works in their schedule that would be less cost to them to do the evaluation. And so.
So we can look into what that entails, and if it needs a letter, if you would authorize the mayor to sign that, get that going. Couple other little updates. Hartman Rocks cleanup was...
Well, I had one. I had a comment on that last one. Yeah. I mean, it sounds very familiar to, or similar to, a program they have in the Front Range where the energy companies can come in and place a unit on their people's residence.
Yeah.
I guess that all sounds really good, someone coming here and putting that in for us. However, does that bind us to XL forever?
No.
I mean,
no.
So if they ever decide to change the utility, would we have that flexibility to still be able to break that?
Oh, you can. Look, in terms of what the first part is, after the lease ends up being a lease with that particular company for that site, that does not deal with a WAPA contract. Okay. It does not deal with a contract for extra power from anybody else.
Okay.
It deals with that site specifically.
Okay, got it.
And since that would be a potentially a city-owned site after the portion is paid off, that the cost, that the recovery cost on
if
the construction.
If it's on our cap.
Yep.
Yeah.
If it's not on our cap, they're not going to invest funds unless they have a long-term lease. So it would lock you into that site for a number of years, probably 50, maybe more. But it doesn't preclude you from switching your power purchase.
No. Perfect. Okay.
That's a good question. Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you for that. Sorry. Hartman Rocks cleanup day was May 20th, and it was pretty amazing. We had 260 volunteers with an overall hourly value of $43,000. Two trail maintenance projects that collected 1,700 pounds of trash and 178 pounds of dog excrement. And they also collected 5 miles of barbed wire fencing from public land. So that was a great effort, and it's just really an amazing turnout of volunteers. So pretty amazing on that. We also have the water feature charged at the IOF Park. The festival lighting has mostly been installed. We were waiting for some backordered lights, but they got some in hopefully for Memorial Day just to make sure that that is looking great for the Growler event coming up. And the demonstration garden at Quartz and 11th is going along really well, and it should be done in the next week or two. So that's a lot of great work from our Parks and Rec crews. So
great.
Thanks,
Ben.
One question. Are we still doing electronic recycling through Public Works? Or
so we have passed that off on to, I forget the organization.
Sustainable CB.
Yeah, CB.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're managing that down at the
County
location.
Oh, question?
Yep. Ben, regarding ditches.
Yes.
A lot of concern.
Lots of concerns about the
weekend. Talking to me about this and that, and looking at the city website, and it says May 1st, ditches run May 1st to September 15th.
On the website.
On the city website. And so anyway, I was just wondering if, I mean, last couple of years it just seems to be a delay for one thing or another, if we could, you know, try to be a little bit more consistent on getting those ditches. We're really lucky to have the moisture we had this year, which has been a savior, but... you know, there's a lot of people that I know that are gardening and really rely on that, and I just don't know. I mean, if it says May 1st,
yeah,
it would
look
be really
that,
nice if
know.
We could have them start testing to see if, you know, do that in the fall before they shut it down, see how those infrastructure's
so
looking.
So say May 1st because that's not...
Yeah, I don't think our rights are there.
What's that now?
I don't think May 15th.
Well,
that's what it says. I got it right here
ditches,
off the webpage. Yeah,
but it shouldn't say that is my point.
Yeah, that's wrong.
So we can look into that typo, but specifically with this year, I mean, we really did have the goal of having them running by May 15th, but they have a leak. They can't even identify where it really is right now still. They worked on it for many days trying to get this solved, but... Essentially, it's probably a result of construction that's occurred around Paintbrush in the last years, and there may have been like a tree root that's grown into the ditch area, and when they're ripping those out, they're pulling on the trunks, and those root systems are plugging holes into the ditch system, and something like that may have occurred.
Okay.
At this point, they think that they've got it to where it's minimized to an extent that they can run the ditches all year, and then we'll try to figure out where that leak is and fix that after the end of the season. But that was the reason for the delay, and they were just waiting for concrete to cure, and it's just we're hopeful that there's not a sinkhole or something that develops as a result of this water leaking out of the ditch.
Hey,
so
Ben, can I add to that?
Oh, is David's on the line? Thank you. Did you have something to add, David?
Yeah, I would like. I'm happy to report that I think we got that leak fixed.
Oh, great!
May 15th is the official ditch date. We cannot turn it on before then because of our water rights. If our website says May 1, then we need to correct that for sure. But May 15th is when it got turned on, and immediately when it got turned on, we saw the leak, and we started working on it because we didn't know it leaked until we turned the water on. So we've been working on that. So we made some quick fixes on there yesterday, hoping that it would hold, because we had pretty much made the decision that we were just going to let it leak, you know, regardless, because we knew people wanted their water, which we understand that. But we think it's going to hold, so keep your fingers crossed and everything is good. But that's the delay. It's because we didn't want to blow out, have a problem with erosion or the ditch blow out down there by lot 22.
Thank you, David.
I'll get that changed tonight. Correct.
Great. I think those are important, worth noting on the ditches, that it's a very underfunded operation, right? So
I think we need to look at that, too, because, I mean, it's a entity that's pretty special to a lot of people here, and if it's underfunded, maybe we need to.
This would be a great topic for budget discussions and really trying to come up with a solution. It's going to be a tough discussion, but I think we're at the point where we can't kick the can down the road anymore further.
Thank you, Ben. I think we have like 0.5 FTE for this whole thing, and we wound up pretty much putting all of the water crew on there for 6 weeks. That's how much time and labor, and that's just to get it going, and then we have to maintain it throughout the year. It's very, very labor intensive.
And that's not counting all the backlog repair work that needs to be done in throughout the system, which is a huge investment.
We can't let it go.
Yeah.
We can't let it go.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I would think we need to continue that investment.
Definitely. Yeah. Anything else, questions for me, things that need follow-up?
I wanted to follow up a little bit on the water treatment plant. I know you're talking about essentially an infill zone for the water that comes out of the river. And I was just sort of curious about...
Are you talking about the infiltration gallery?
Yep. Yep.
David actually has some information that we're working with the state about that.
Well, and I have questions about... I just wondered whether what the difference is in terms of how things function and cost with a system or a direct pipeline. Now, there's obvious reasons in terms of various systems and how they work. And I'm not expecting an answer tonight, but it is something that I think we ought to have a range of information on.
David, would it be appropriate to share some of your
work
today with the State Division of Water Resources? Or?
Yeah, we had the division engineer come down today with our water engineers to just make sure that we're complying with our water right. So what we had proposed was an infiltration gallery, which
David, is... sorry to cut you off, David. Just a quick thought here. As I understand, this will be before us on the 20th. Of June, right?
That'll be, yes. We will be more talking about the treatment process, what we're selected, and that will, and moving forward with grants and the schedule and that sort of thing. Yes.
Could we hold this then until that, just to keep it all together, given the charge that is around this particular project, if that's all right?
Absolutely. And Jim, if you can come by my office and I can fill you in on that.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ben, for all that. Any additional updates? No? Who's next? Our newest member.
Hey.
Western Liaison, Leah Thomas.
Taylor,
I'm sorry.
All good.
And not from
Louisiana, from Alabama.
Yeah.
Leah Taylor from Alabama. Welcome, and any updates from you?
Yes, so Leslie Taylor sent out an email to the student body saying that the grounds crew had to remove two blue spruce trees on campus due to blue spruce and graver beetle kill, and the Forest Service recommended they remove them, and they were located at the corner of Tamichi Avenue and Loveland Street. They removed them at the beginning of May, and they have already planted new trees there. The food hub has summer hours on campus Monday and Wednesday, 4 to 7. And lastly, financial services has been working to notify students of scholarships they have received through the foundation for next semester.
Great. Apologies for messing up your last name.
All good.
Leah Thomas is a friend of mine.
Give one chance the next time you
throw something. Thank you so much, Leah. And then we'll move into counselor reports. We'll start with Bo.
Okay. Sorry about that. I'm returning a quick text. I have a chamber meeting tomorrow morning at 7:30. Looking forward. And thank you for covering all the other ones you did this winter. I appreciate that. I'm back now. a couple requests. I would love to see the pedestrian crossing signs put back into place on 135 and 50 soon.
Okay.
I think having those 1st of May, I mean, if it snows, it just melts. They don't really plow after that. But pedestrian signs. And the new digital signs are great. Really love that idea. Those things look, they work well. I would love to see them flash, though, if they're going 1 mile an hour over the speed limit instead of 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. Hey, you're going over speed limit. You're going 41 instead of 40. So anyway, that's all I have.
Thank you, Bo.
Yep.
Jim?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Mallory?
The observatory is starting to sell out for our public nights, dome tours, and lectures galore.
Wow.
So get on that website and see when you want to come out. There's always opportunities to volunteer. Oh, yeah, if you're interested. It's really fun. And strategic planning occurring across all boards that I'm involved with, so that's always fun. Housing Authority, we've kind of knocked around a rough draft. And can I email it to you all for input? Would it be helpful if I sent it to Community Development to review the Housing Authority strategic plan? We have Erin Ganser from Town of CB who attends all of our meetings, and she already did some edits for Town of CB, but just want to make sure that we get our thoughts represented there, especially as budget season rolls around.
You can just send that to me and I can bounce it around.
Great. I'll do that. And Frontierlands, we're going to have a whole update that I don't
have
think
you heard
I need
the latest
to report
news?
On yet.
You've heard the latest from today?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
We'll save that. But GV Heat, everything is still crushing, and we will be managing the Sawtooth rentals. And we've also been working on a good home buyer education program, and we're working on an onboarding system for when we onboard new board members, which is going to be really important. These meetings have gotten really efficient and effective with a new board chair and a new executive director, and just really.
Sorry, that's the housing. Sorry.
Yes.
Great.
Thrilled with the direction that we've been going. Let's see. I will have a store meeting Thursday, and we adopted our strategic plan. And this Thursday, we'll be discussing the Crested Butte to CB South multimodal trail that's finally happening. That's going to be great. And just kind of reviewing the implementation of this strategic plan, and we've got some teams and team leads. I will be on the communication team. And last day of school on Friday for the high school kiddos. So pop into
all the kids.
Pop into McDonald's if you want some hot fries from Harlan this summer.
Good service over there. I've experienced that service is outrageous.
With Harlan?
Oh, it's just the best. He serves a good cup of senior coffee. 75 cents.
I drove through and he threw a Happy Meal anymore. In my window.
75 cents.
So.
It's a good deal. And the service is excellent.
And then I don't know if anyone else, Erica, should have mentioned this with schedule updates, but Town of CB reached out about a little stakeholder meeting June 12th. And I RSVP'd yes, so this is regarding their compass, I think.
Yeah,
okay. But this is the transportation aspect. So that'll be at the Center for the Arts, 9 to noon on June 12th.
I am pretty confident I can be there for that, too.
That means three of us will be
okay.
there.
Okay, thank you.
So it'll need to be noticed.
And October is right around the corner, so
what?
Just kidding.
Happy That's Halloween.
Get your Halloween costume ready.
Just making sure we're paying attention.
How old have you turned for treaters this year?
Thank
you very much, Mallory.
I know. It's crazy.
All right. Jim, any additions to your written report?
Nope. And I've also RSVP'd to the 12th meeting in CB.
Okay. Maybe I'll see you there. Thank you much, Jim. On my end, next week I will be at a happy hour with the Colorado Health Foundation. I will also be at a lunch with the same entity. And this is a foundation that focuses on health equity and people who are living in low income. The intent here is to prioritize and hopefully make connections for funding Ricardo's position. I will also be at the June 14th Immigrant Heritage Celebration, or 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, just so you know, I found somebody that can help read the proclamation in Japanese.
Oh, great.
What?
And then I think that's
about all I've got that's important. So with that, seeing no further updates, comments from anybody, we will stand adjourn from our regular session meeting and move into a work session. We'll stand adjourned at 8.06 p.m. from regular session.
If we could.
Yep, okay. We'll take a five-minute recess and come back for a work session here briefly.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Drank this whole can of Leah, water.
Leah, you don't have to stay.
Okay, yeah. Recording stopped.
Casey was like, you can leave after the regular session.
Yes.